Global shifts in digital participation lead to interesting design challenges. In areas of the world where touchscreens dominate, most designers are focused on creating graphic user interfaces. These can be seen and touched. In areas of the world where voice-activated interfaces will dominate, designers are focused on speech commanding and conversational design. Design for societal inclusion needs to consider the greater cultural context that surrounds a design. Complex challenges like language, politics, currency, internet bandwidth, and social nuances are important factors in designing inclusive solutions. At minimum, inclusion will depend on how well designers can work beyond the types of abilities and technologies that dominate their immediate environment. Design for one, design for 7 billion. The more I learn about inclusive design, the more I'm convinced that there are 7.4 billion different types of people on the planet. Empathy is a word that is often used in design. What does it mean to design with empathy for billions of people? As technologists grow more aware of the exclusion that their products might create, there's a renewed focus on increasing empathy. This word, like the word inclusion, has many different interpretations. Some design methods for empathy focus on simply talking to people. For example, introducing yourself to people on the street and asking them for feedback on an idea. Other approaches emphasize ways to question your own assumptions and abstractly consider how other people might feel about a problem. Some teams have extensive research departments where sociologists, anthropologists, and psychologists conduct studies with people. Most of these approaches don't scale to the level of billions of people. Various cultures describe the concept of empathy in different ways. In the context of designing technology, there are two Mandarin Chinese descriptions of empathy that are particularly useful. One translation is to reason with the heart. Another translation is to sense the total situation. Building solutions on a global scale requires designers to do both equally well. It's making sense through the greater context and the relationships that lie therein, incorporating both the breadth and the depth of humanity. This is how empathy will evolve to meet the challenges of designing for 7.4 billion people. Inclusion requires us to shift our assumptions about who receives the things we design. It starts with curiosity and observation. Analyzing massive amounts of data can amplify new categories of problems to solve. It can help us iterate through ideas and optimize our solutions more quickly. And when we craft those solutions, we have a responsibility to make sure they work well for people, functionally and emotionally. These are nuances that come from real-life, human-to-human conversations. Not everyone is an anthropologist. We aren't all mathematicians. Not everyone is great at putting aside their cultural preconceptions. But we can all learn how to seek out excluded perspectives and let them supersede our own. Takeaways: testing our assumptions about human beings. Exclusion habits. Designing for a mythical, average human that presumes 80% majority and 20% minority use cases. Assuming that people will adapt themselves to make a solution work. How to shift toward inclusion. Create a baseline assessment of how well your solution works for excluded communities, especially people with disabilities. Create a persona spectrum that is specific to the problem you're trying to solve. Build thick data with the people who face the greatest mismatches in using your solutions. Learn from their expertise with thoughtful observation and inquiry. Balance big data with thick data. Use big data as a heat map to reveal key mismatches between people and your solution. Use thick data to investigate the reasons behind these mismatches and gain insight into better solutions. Build one-size-fits-one solutions to fit people who likely face the greatest mismatches when using your solutions. Extend the solution to people who face similar mismatches on a temporary and situational basis. Focus on the shared reasons why each of these groups want to participate in your solution. 8. Love stories. How Inclusion Drives Innovative Outcomes. How many objects in your home are the result of inclusive design? Maybe it's the adjustable chair at your desk, the keyboard to your computer, your smartphone touchscreen, your reading glasses. These and many more objects are the descendants of a long history of innovations that were made to remedy exclusion. Many assistive solutions that were originally marketed to people with disabilities eventually found mainstream potential. As technology improves, functionality gets better, and market opportunities expand. In turn, businesses that recognize these opportunities are more likely to invest in making the design of that product highly usable and beautiful. This remains true for a number of rising technologies. Speech recognition and voice commanding were, in part, initially designed for people with disabilities as a way to interact with computers without using a keyboard, mouse, or screen. Today, millions of people are talking to their cars and household devices to get directions, check the weather, and order pizzas using the same core technologies. The deep exclusion habit in what we make is the fixed meaning we assign to objects. A classic creative thinking exercise is to imagine multiple ways of using a typical brick. A brick could be used to build a wall. This fits the expected context and application of a brick. A brick can also be utilized to hold a door open in the summer. It can be heated and used to cook a meal, or ground into dust and used as sand. When we change the shape, context, or purpose of an object, it can take on a new meaning. By stretching our assumptions about the purpose of an object or environment, we can explore how that solution flexes to be whatever a person needs it to be. The signature trait of an inclusive solution is how it adapts to fit each unique person. The stretch of creativity can be particularly challenging for problem solvers who think about excluded communities and accessibility in fixed ways. A brick is a tool for building walls. A screen reader is a tool for someone who's blind. Video captioning is a tool for people who are deaf. Accessibility products are often thought of as fixed and specialized solutions for people with disabilities. As a result, accessible solutions often lack thoughtful design. Physically assistive objects like canes, wheelchairs, prosthetic limbs, or support braces can resemble the cold, medical objects of a surgeon's operating room. Steel metal bars, rough materials, industrial-grade plastics, and lifeless colors. Everything about the design can feel like a cue to the user and to others around them that they are a patient in need of help. The same is often true in creation of digital products. When a solution is treated as for disability or for accessibility, there's often little or no attention paid to the design. A solution might meet all of its functional requirements, but still lead to emotional or aesthetic mismatches that can be equally alienating. Assistive devices, in particular, often play an intimate role in a person's life. They become much more than just objects. They can be an extension of a person's independence, beauty, strength, and connection with the world. The fixed way of thinking about assistive objects often triggers a few common questions before leaders are willing to invest in inclusion. What is the business case for it? What is the return on investment? How can you prove that it works? Before we dive into business justifications, it's helpful to study tangible examples of innovations that grew out of mismatched designs. A person who has experienced a great mismatch is likely to take an object that was intended for one purpose and use it in new ways. A desire to participate demands that they work creatively with what's available to resolve the mismatches for themselves. Here are some of my favorite examples of inclusive design and the stories behind them. The flexible straw. Joseph Friedman was at an ice cream shop with his young daughter. Sitting at the counter, she was having a hard time drinking her milkshake through the straight paper straw without spilling the drink. Friedman inserted a screw into the straw and tightly wrapped a wire around it to make a flexible joint. That bend in the straw made it possible for his daughter to comfortably enjoy her beverage. but it also works well for anyone who's unable to hold a glass to their mouth or reclined in bed from illness or injury. It also benefits anyone who's reclined on a beach enjoying their favorite vacation beverage. Typewriters and keyboards. One of the first typing machines was invented with a woman named Countess Carolina Fantoni de Fivizzano in the early 1800s. She was the friend and lover, according to some sources, of Italian inventor Pellegrino Turi. The Countess slowly lost her vision at a time when the only way for someone who was blind to send letters was by dictating their note to another person, who would transcribe the message to paper. In order to keep their communications private, the Countess and Turi invented a machine that could be used to write notes by pressing a key for a single letter, raising a metal arm to press each letter into carbon paper. This invention made writing accessible to people who were blind. But many derivatives have evolved over the past two centuries into the modern-day keyboards for computing and mobile devices. Fingerworks. Wayne Westerman wanted to create a method of interacting with a computer that required no force in the hand. He was motivated, in part, by his own severe case of carpal tunnel syndrome. His company, Fingerworks, developed a way to replace a keyboard with a touchpad for each hand. They initially marketed their invention to people with hand disabilities and repetitive strain injuries to their arms. The company had a base of passionate customers who came to depend on Fingerworks products in their daily computer usage. There was also an increase in customers who were interested in the design as an easier way to navigate their computer, regardless of their abilities or limitations. Fingerworks sold their technology to Apple in 2005. Enabling the tech giant to build their first gesture-controlled multi-touch interface, the iPhone. Westerman is listed on a 2007 iPhone patent. However, in the process, the original Fingerworks product was discontinued. Pill pack. The childproof cap on prescription bottles was invented in the 1960s, about the same time that manufacturers started to apply candy coating to pills of aspirin. They needed a way to ensure that children couldn't access the bottles. However, childproof caps are hard for everyone to use, not just children. People with limited dexterity of their hands, many of them due to age or injury, have a particularly difficult time opening a childproof bottle. Furthermore, for people who take multiple medications, the risk of mistaking medication can be serious, even deadly. And a curved surface of a pill bottle increases this risk by making it difficult to read instructions on the label. PillPack founder and second-generation pharmacist T.J. Parker and his team partnered with IDEO to design a better way to deliver prescriptions. They focused on people who faced the greatest mismatches in using medication. Some of them were long-term cancer patients who took over a dozen different medications in 1 week. Their final solution wasn't simply a more accessible pill bottle. They reimagined the prescription delivery service. A patient can order their prescriptions through PillPack, and their medication arrives in pre-sorted packages. So rather than the patient needing to organize their medications manually, they simply remove one small pouch that contains the right medication for the right time of day. For the 30 million people who needed to take more than 5 prescription medications in 1 day, the solution drastically improves safety and convenience. PillPack is now working to improve the system of interactions between patients, pharmacies, doctors, and insurance companies with the launch of their comprehensive service, Pharmacy OS. Sonification of the stars. Wanda Diaz-Merced is an astronomer born and raised in Gurabo, Puerto Rico. A passionate math and science student, she and her sister dreamed of riding in a space shuttle. While studying astronomy, she started to lose her eyesight. For an astronomer, one of the key ways to study data from astronomical events is through visual illustrations. As her eyesight changed, Diaz-Merced worried that she wouldn't be able to continue to practice and grow in her profession. She started using a technique called sonification, which makes it possible to listen to the stars by turning the data from stellar radiation into audio files. She matches the patterns of the data to pitches of sound. During her PhD research, she explored new and better techniques for sonification of astronomical data. She wrote, Sound offers a way to increase sensitivity to visually ambiguous events embedded in the kinds of data space scientists and astronomers analyze. Radio waves are conveyed by drums, X-rays by the harpsichord, and so on. Diaz-Merced continues to practice astronomy at a world-class level. Sonification also improves access to astronomical data for a much broader group of people. In particular, for any astronomer who is unable to distinguish colors used in a data visualization, or anyone who's losing their vision due to age or injury. For practitioners in any data-oriented field, using a combination of audio and visual information gives them greater access to the nuances of their data. Email. Vint Cerf is best known as the father of the internet. He's considered one of the primary architects of its early development. In 2002, Cerf authored The Internet is for Everyone, a summary of what makes internet access a human right, key threats to that access, and a plea for the internet to be engineered in ways that make it usable by anyone in the world. To this day, Cerf asserts the importance of accessibility. It's almost criminal that programmers have not had their feet held to the fire to build interfaces that are accommodating for people with disabilities. He also created some of the earliest protocols for email. Cerf is hard of hearing and his wife is deaf. At the time, they couldn't use a telephone to communicate. His work on email started, in part, as a way for him and his wife to stay connected when they weren't together in the same room. Email, of course, is today nearly as ubiquitous as the internet. Along with closed captioning and subtitles, it has become a key technology for people who are deaf, have hearing loss, or are simply separated by time and space. Morgan's Inspiration Island. In the blazing summer heat of San Antonio, water parks are an important place for children and their families to cool down and play. One water park is named after Morgan Hartman, who, with her parents Gordon and Maggie, built this park of inclusion. They were inspired to do so after years of being unable to find great play spaces for Morgan, who has cognitive and physical disabilities. They set out to create a place where children with and without disabilities could play together in a barrier-free environment. There are a few things that make Morgan's Inspiration Island extraordinary, beyond its colorful water features and accessible design. First, the Hartmans included a wide range of people with disabilities and specialists in creating the park. Second, they developed ways to adjust water temperature in real time so it can be personalized to a child's sensory needs. Third, they worked with engineers at the University of Pittsburgh and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to stock the park with motorized wheelchairs that are powered by compressed air, a design called the New Chair. The chairs are safe for water play and only take 10 minutes to recharge. And lastly, the park is free of charge to anyone with a disability. Many of these examples are love stories. In fact, love is a common trait in the creation of inclusive solutions. Some stories center around a person who is personally affected by a mismatched design. Their love for a profession or a lifelong passion for an activity put a sharp focus on how it could be improved. Then they work directly on building a better solution. Other stories come from a mismatch that loved ones face when something interrupted their connection to each other. In all cases, people worked with their intimate understanding of exclusion and with the participation of excluded communities to design a solution that went on to benefit a wider group of people. There are many stories of inclusive design, some that reach massive commercial success and others that are working quietly in the background of everyday life. Drawing from these examples, here are four ways to start building a business justification for inclusion. 1. Customer engagement and contribution. Engagement with a product increases when it's easier to use. The key to this business justification is to demonstrate exactly how mismatched designs are affecting real customers. Work with excluded communities to record the challenges they face when using your product. Detail the kinds of hacks that they use to make the product work. Make it crystal clear and tangible. Present these stories to leadership teams as obstacles to customer engagement and explain how removing those specific mismatches can reduce the friction for many more customers. Another type of engagement happens when customers contribute to the development of your product. Most types of technology and how they're made are largely mysteries to the general public. Yet these solutions play a primary role in people's daily lives. Their inclusion can mean more to them than you realize. Meeting in person and incorporating their input can increase their sense of belonging with your brand and product. Listen carefully to people and pay attention to the emotional connections. Share the stories of how they influenced your design decisions. 2. Growing a larger customer base. It can seem counterintuitive to start with a sharp focus on excluded communities. The strength of this approach is that it outlines clear constraints, helping teams build a deep understanding of how to connect with a wider target audience. In a similar way, aspirational brands commonly focus on an elite community to build mass market products. For example, working with world-class athletes to build a new footwear line, or partnering with blockbuster filmmakers to explore augmented reality experiences. Stronger constraints can push designers and engineers to innovate. The key is to do so in a way that translates to a broader market by finding ways to make the solution relevant to a general audience. Another way to build a business case for inclusion based on market size is through the persona spectrum. Quantify the number of people whose abilities lie within the permanent, temporary, and situational categories of a spectrum of exclusion. If more is better, this argument is one way to present inclusive design as a significant market opportunity. 3. Innovation and differentiation. Leaders are often surprised by how inclusion can fuel innovation. Accessible solutions, in particular, have a history of seeding innovations that benefit a broader audience. This is for two reasons. First, many companies have decades worth of ideas and prototypes that they've developed but never released into the world. These solutions often sit unused, like a pantry of ingredients in a kitchen. Then, with a shift in perspective or context, an ingredient that was originally intended for one purpose becomes useful in a new way. When teams shift toward inclusion, they discover new solutions, but also new ways to make use of existing but unused solutions. For example, screen contrast. Computer displays can be adjusted to increase the contrast in colors between different elements, like text and the background it sits against. This feature is vitally important to people with types of low vision that make it difficult to distinguish between objects on a screen if their colors are similar. Screen contrast became relevant to a much wider group of people once mobile phones arrived. Suddenly, anyone who was using a phone in bright sunlight had a hard time reading the information on the screen. As smartphones evolved, they used existing screen contrast technologies to automatically adjust a screen and make it readable outdoors. A new problem created new relevance for an existing technology, improving the product for a wider group of customers. Second, innovation is amplified by new perspectives. Through inclusive design methods, a team learns how to open their process to include people with complementary ability biases and new kinds of expertise. Sometimes, the person who can have the greatest impact on a solution is someone who has relevant expertise but isn't deeply involved in the technical intricacies. Many inclusive innovations don't require a dramatic reinvention of technology. They don't require tearing down existing solutions to create new ones. Often, it's just applying a new lens to the resources that already exist and forming new combinations of existing solutions. It starts by employing new perspectives to reframe the problems we aim to solve. 4. Avoiding the high cost of retrofitting inclusion. Many teams and companies treat accessibility and inclusion as an add-on, something to consider only in the final stages of completing a product. It's the unfortunate result of the bell-curved belief in an average human. A team that treats inclusion as an afterthought focuses first on people they imagine are most like themselves, especially in ability and in cognitive and societal preferences. They commonly believe that this group of people represents the majority of their audience. Conversely, they will assume that demographically underrepresented groups of people, like people with disabilities, are edge cases, a small percentage of the population that doesn't represent large opportunities for revenue. This is simply a myth. The myth of the minority user. After decades of building products with an average human mindset, there is a lot of neglected accessibility work that needs to be addressed. While it's hard to gauge exactly what percentage of all websites are inaccessible, a growing number of accessibility audit firms will tell you that their clients are often surprised at how many of their websites and digital products don't meet legal standards for accessibility. It can take huge resource investments to fix these basic issues. This is the high cost of treating accessibility as an afterthought. Another way to quantify the cost of retrofitting inclusion is the number of lawsuits and public relations missteps companies face when they release discriminatory solutions. From aggressive startups to careful tech incumbents, there are plenty of examples of how costly it can be to neglect issues of inclusion during the product development process. Kathy O'Neill, author of Weapons of Math Destruction, does an excellent job detailing the potential dark depths of human biases that are baked into technology. Beyond the accidental chatbot that's trained to spew hate speech, or a selfie filter that resembles insensitive racial caricatures, O'Neill provides examples of how machine learning is amplifying the cycle of exclusion on a massive scale. From predictive policing to the algorithms that determine what advertisements show up on your phone, the cycle of exclusion is amplified when machines are coded through human bias. Ideally, every new product or project would consider inclusive design from the beginning as a way to proactively save time and resources. There would be no retrofitting required. More feasibly, inclusive design needs to happen when and where it can, while always pushing to happen earlier in the development process. The best way to do this is to weave inclusive design methods throughout the entire process of developing a solution. There is no one-size-fits-all approach to practicing inclusive design. Each company needs to employ a combination of methods that complements their existing processes. Beautiful objects, human emotions. The cycle of exclusion culminates with the solutions that we introduce into the world. What we make is a powerful starting point in the cycle of exclusion. It can spark the imagination. It's the point in the cycle that embodies our excitement for innovation. Introducing a new technology into society can have a profound impact on how people feel and behave. Sometimes it's an intense obsession, like Pokemon Go. At other times, it's a lukewarm affection that grows into a deep dependency, such as touchscreen smartphones. The relationship between humans and objects are filled with emotions. Being rejected by exclusionary designs can lead to negative emotions. In contrast, a design that fits a person's unique body and mind can have a positive emotional impact. Whether it's the beauty of listening to the sounds of a distant star or the sense of adventure that comes from making new friends in a water park, the mark of a successful inclusive solution is that it's both a functional and an emotional fit. In many ways, people are slower to change than technology. Building inclusive solutions doesn't mean that everyone has to personally embrace the values of inclusion. As we discussed at the opening of this book, inclusion can be easily mistaken for being a nice person. What if, instead, the skills of creating inclusive solutions were the measure of a successful engineer, teacher, civic leader, or designer? What if, rather than trying to change how problem solvers feel about inclusion, we could build inclusivity by changing how we create solutions? Could that be a faster path to a more inclusive society? What we choose to make shapes the future of who can participate in and contribute to society. Mismatches can help us stretch our thinking far beyond technology for the sake of technology. A brick is more than a brick. the objects that assist us are more than accessories. Inclusive methods can help ensure that in our pursuit of innovative solutions, we are also making solutions that are humane. Takeaways: how inclusion drives innovative outcomes. Exclusion habits. A limited willingness to imagine how a solution in one context can adapt to provide new kinds of value in a different context. Only focusing on functional outcomes and ignoring emotional mismatches. How to shift toward inclusion. Assess the greatest mismatches in what you make. What barriers currently exist, and how would adapting those barriers open access to more people? Explore how a solution can adapt to be whatever a person needs it to be. Focus on creating flexible systems that fit people in unique ways as they move from one environment to the next. Seek out inclusive design love stories that already exist in your business. How are people using and adapting your solutions as a way to connect with the people and activities that they love? Build a business case for inclusion based on how it supports customer engagement and contribution, growing a larger customer base, innovation and differentiation, avoiding the high cost of retrofitting inclusion. 9. Inclusion is designing the future. Why inclusion matters. We've taken a closer look at each element of the cycle and how we might shift exclusion habits toward a more inclusive path. Now, can we again ask ourselves, why do we make? Why would we sign up for the hard work of building inclusion without a guarantee of success? Why would we fight the inertia of a cycle of exclusion that's been spinning for generations? Certainly, there are business justifications, like gaining new market share, creating better customer experiences, and operating in more efficient ways. There are opportunities to connect teams to a meaningful purpose for their work and a new way of thinking about the people who interact with their solutions. There are professional reasons why inclusion matters. It expands our own thinking about problems that are worth solving. It sparks our creativity to think in new ways, in partnership with new people. And there's our collective future. A future that is built on the choices that we make today to create great solutions that connect people to each other and to opportunities in the places where they live. Some designers will make choices that reach millions of people and will endure for many years. If nothing else, I hope this book illustrates the weight of that privilege and opportunity. But there is one reason for inclusion that transcends all other justifications: uncertainty. So many of the strategies that have led us to exclusion were about avoiding uncertainty. As children, we protect our games from disruption and uninvited intrusions. As designers and engineers, we use mathematical models to homogenize the people we design for. As architects, we wipe away existing patterns of familiarity with a mandate to create order out of perceived chaos. Yet now we face greater uncertainty than ever before. Not just in the ways digital technologies permeate our societies, but in our connections with each other. Our future selves. My preteen daughter had this to say when I asked her to describe design. It's a series of movements, powered by the human body, hand, or foot, or any part of the body. It's also a thought in your mind that can be written, said, or drawn out. Everything that you make, from a knot in your hair to a satellite, is designed. There's a lot of really good ideas out there. She tells me that in 8 years, there will be true hoverboards and medicines that prevent people from dying at a young age. If there was one problem that she could solve today, it would be making sure that everyone has a home to keep them safe and healthy. I can't help but consider her answers in the context of my father's life. When he was a child, his family was detained at Angel Island as part of the Chinese Exclusion Act, passed by the U.S. Congress of 1882. The act initially prohibited all Chinese laborers from entering the U.S. for 10 years and was extended in 1924 to all Chinese immigrants. It wasn't fully repealed until 1943. Shortly after they were released from Angel Island, his father and toddler-age sister died of respiratory illnesses. My grandmother had to make a life for herself and my father in a new country. It's an incredibly difficult time for him to recount. Too many sad memories, he says. As kids, my sister and I would follow him through the streets of San Francisco. We'd explore the hills of Chinatown, where our grandmother ran her business trading Tahitian imports and exports. In particular, we loved the YMCA yard, where he played with his friends, and the basement after-school center, where he stayed extra hours to study Cantonese. They lived in the back of their shop for years, until my grandmother saved enough money to buy a home in Oakland, across San Francisco Bay. On our final trip together to the city, we walked the path along Stockton Street, looking for the old shop, and found in its place a 15-foot wall that spanned the entire block. Signs across the wall announced the upcoming construction of a new transit station on the site. After that, he never wanted to go back to the city again. Exclusion and inclusion shaped our family in deep ways. Gaining access to American society was one level of inclusion. Gradually being able to participate in that society was another level. Perhaps, also, being able to bring his own kids back to that first home was another kind of inclusion, one that represented a sense of belonging. The same things that motivate my daughter also motivated my family over 90 years ago. Health, safety, a home, and the desire to create. Making something that contributes to society in positive ways. I hope she's right. I hope the near future holds the promise that she imagines, and that she sees herself as an important contributor to that future. With my father, I recognize how my future body will change. My hearing will fade by the time I'm 70. My eyesight will cloud over and grow noticeably worse at night. My memory will remain sharp on some details, and I'll start to forget others. My arms and legs will lose their strength. How will the design of my environment ensure that I can participate in society, rather than becoming socially isolated with age? This might be the most immediate kind of uncertainty that we each face, our ever-changing abilities. Many of us are temporarily able-bodied and will face new kinds of exclusion as we age. When we design for inclusion, we are designing for our future selves. Not just for the changes in our body, but also our ability to contribute to society. It's designing how the next generation will treat and care for us. It's making solutions to uphold the human connections that are most important in our lives, our dignity, health, safety, and sense of being at home. Future of technology. Another area of uncertainty is how the next generation of technology will unfold. The evolution of technological ages can be framed in multiple ways. I like to think about them in terms of the relationship between humans and machines. The industrial age was initially fueled by the mechanization of production that replaced some types of human labor. People consumed the products of industrialization, from mass-manufactured clothing to food to cars. Each object played one or two specific roles in a person's life. The information age gave rise to human-computer interactions, where people met machines through a digital interface. Although these interfaces have grown complex and play many roles in our lives, they are still largely the product of a fixed set of choices determined by an engineer or a designer. They are hard-coded to perform certain tasks and follow certain rules. Their behavior is planned to a large degree, and the people who interact with these interfaces have to adapt themselves to consume information in the predetermined ways that a program can deliver it. We are now feeling the pressure of a transition to a new age of technology. Most companies are scrambling to make use of the overwhelming amounts of data being collected from people using digital interfaces. Nearly 1.7 megabytes of new data per human per second. Today, about 90% of that data is unstructured, meaning it doesn't follow a predefined data model and takes a lot of human manipulation to turn it into useful information. The small group of people with the elite skills to craft this data and the machine learning models that consume it are more like specialized artisans than traditional software engineers. How people interact with these new systems is also changing. In the face of this change, there's a lot of experimentation happening. there's great enthusiasm for the ways that machine learning models can generate, refine, and optimize better designs. Data from these models can persuade individual leaders to make decisions using more than their personal biases and preferences. Many pioneers in data-driven product development will tell you that the customer, through data, is always right, and that it's best to move fast and adapt through real-time customer feedback. Yet, how do we avoid overdependence on mathematical models to reduce uncertainty, an overdependence that will lead us to cycles of exclusion similar to Quetelet's normal curve? Can big data and machine learning algorithms respect human individuality, or will they just move all of us toward the center of the curve? Our enthusiasm for data analysis could easily override our willingness to understand its limits. Most designers and engineers are just starting to explore what these models are great at, and when their results are deceptively wrong. Questions like these are important because the rise in machine learning will form the backbone of new human-computer interactions. When you're talking with an artificial intelligence to order a movie or send a message to a friend overseas, when you apply for a student loan or a job, or when your thermostat adjusts the temperature in your home, these machines are programmed to decide how to respond to you without human consultation. They are making recommendations to product teams on how to improve products using data amassed from millions of people. These technologies aren't new. Many of them have been around for decades. The explosion of data and specialized hardware are fueling a new surge in machine learning and artificial intelligence solutions. So now, more than ever, the balance of thick data and big data is important. In particular, thick data that helps us understand the complexity of human behavior, the underlying cultural and personal reasons why people do what they do. And a great place to start understanding why they do is through the inclusion of excluded communities. For all the debate around the benefits and dangers of the various forms of learning machines, one trait makes this technology particularly interesting to inclusive design: adaptation. A machine that can flex itself to the unique needs of one person could be deeply personal to millions of people in infinite ways. It's easy to understand why there's an excited frenzy of innovation in these new classes of technology. However, there are emotional consequences. Think back to those kindergarten classrooms and the sting of rejection. Being personal and adaptive cuts multiple ways. When something fits you beautifully and feels like a true match to your individual needs, it can be a deeply positive experience. Conversely, when a solution excludes you, it can feel deeply personal as well. When a machine makes the decision on who to include or exclude, how will that feel? For every new area where technology is introduced as a facilitator of human interactions, what extra degree of responsibility must be built into that machine? How do we hold that machine and its creators accountable for exclusionary or harmful outcomes? Will we even recognize how those consequences are shaping the world around us if the general public doesn't have a basic understanding of how these solutions work? Will already marginalized communities become even more invisible? These are not assertions. They are genuine questions. These are the choices that every problem solver, engineer, architect, designer, lawmaker, entrepreneur, leader, and more should be asking as digital technologies permeate every area of society. These moments of technological transition are the ideal time to introduce inclusive design. We can engineer these new models to ensure that they don't lead to exclusionary design for the non-existent average human. Without inclusion at the heart of the AI age, we risk amplifying the cycle of exclusion on a massive scale. It won't just be perpetuated by human beings. It will be accelerated by self-directed machines that are simply reproducing the intentions, biases, and preferences of their human creators. Inclusive growth and human potential. Perhaps the greatest uncertainty is how global economies, governments, and businesses will respond to the changes being driven by the next generation of technologies, and how their reactions will shape design decisions. The approach to inclusion in this book is heavily based on U.S.-centric definitions of inclusion, accessibility, and disability. Globally, there are varied approaches to inclusion that are rooted in cultural factors, such as language or the categories that are used to differentiate between groups of people. For many countries, shifting cycles of exclusion toward inclusion is ultimately an economic shift, a profound one. Why does growth matter? Who will lead it? Who will it benefit? And how will we get there? On a global scale, there's a rising conversation about inclusive growth. Inclusive growth is defined as economic growth that creates opportunity for all segments of the population and distributes the dividends of increased prosperity, both in monetary and non-monetary terms, fairly across society. The World Economic Forum, WEF, further describes inclusive growth as a positive or negative feedback loop between economic growth and social inequality. There is mounting evidence that inequality has a statistically significant negative impact on growth, and that reducing inequality can enhance and strengthen the resilience of growth. For example, if the income share of the top 20% increases, GDP growth tends to decline. The WEF predicts that at least 5 million jobs in the world's leading economies will be lost to tech by 2020. It's easy to imagine how such large-scale changes in the global workforce could lead to greater social inequality. Instead, how might these changes become opportunities to reduce inequalities and support inclusive growth? Inclusive design could be one way to start, not just for the products and environments of our world, but also for the systems that connect them. The landscape of employable skills and talents is also shifting. In their Future of Jobs report, the WEF lists its prediction for the top 10 skills for future jobs. 1. Complex problem solving. 2. Critical thinking. 3. Creativity. 4. People management. 5. Coordinating with others. 6. Emotional intelligence. 7. Judgment and decision making. 8. Service orientation. 9. Negotiation. 10. Cognitive flexibility. These skills are focused on making sense of uncertainty, on taking multiple approaches to framing a problem worth solving and finding solutions that adapt to fit unique situations. These are the talents of building connections with human beings. We have a lot of work to do to meet these talent demands, including new ways to recognize and remedy exclusion. If we simply carry forward today's solutions for creating designs, writing code, or communicating with people, we risk making these roles even more exclusive than they are today. Inclusive design is simply good design for the digital age. Shifting who can contribute their talents to creating solutions will, in turn, shift what we make, how it's made, and who benefits from those designs. We are all beneficiaries of inclusive design over the course of our lifetimes. Design is essential to inclusive growth. It closes the gaps in the interactions between people and the world around them. We need solutions for human environments that adapt to fit individual needs, diverse bodies, and diverse minds. Returning to the central question of this book, if design is the source of exclusion, can it also be the remedy? Yes. When the principles of inclusive design are applied to any element of the exclusionary cycle, it creates inclusion. We can interrupt our habits, even just for a moment, to recognize the exclusion around us, and invite people who have complementary ability biases to be co-designers in our solutions. We could learn from people whose exclusion expertise could be the key to unlocking some of our toughest challenges. Our one-size-fits-one solutions can extend to serve many more people. When we bring it all together, we create a diversity of ways to participate so that everyone has a sense of belonging. As a problem solver, you can shift the cycle toward inclusion, one choice at a time. With each design, you shape who can contribute their talents to society. Their contributions, in turn, will shape the future for all of us. Takeaways: why inclusion matters. Exclusion habits. Lacking clarity and agreement on what inclusion is and why it matters. How to shift toward inclusion. Use the cycle of exclusion to assess where you are today and where to start. Apply the principles of inclusive design to any element of the cycle of exclusion. Integrate inclusive design methods within your team to build a purposeful culture where people can do their best work. Suggested reading. Chapter 1. Welcome. Inclusive, a short film by Microsoft Design. www.mismatch.design. Chapter 2. Shut in, shut out. Vivian Gussin-Paley, You Can't Say, You Can't Play. Inclusive, a Microsoft Design Toolkit. Subject Matter Expert Video Series 2016. www.mismatch.design. Chapter 3. The Cycle of Exclusion. For more information on the state of disability, World Report on Disability. http://www.worldbank.org/en/topic/disability. UN's Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. http://www.un.org/disabilities/documents/convention/convoprot-e.pdf. Chapter 4. Inclusive Designers. For more information on the definition of accessibility and universal design, Sarah Horton and Whitney Quessenberry, A Web for Everyone, Designing Accessible User Experiences. Wendy Chisholm and Matt May, Universal Design for Web Applications That Reach Everyone. Information on Disability Rights, Identity, and History. Kim E. Nielsen, A Disability History of the United States. Rosemary Garland Thompson, Extraordinary Bodies, Figuring Physical Disability in American Culture and Literature. James I. Charlton, Nothing About Us Without Us, Disability Oppression and Empowerment. Chapter 5, Matchmaking. For more information on urban design and social exclusion, Amy Arnold and Brian Conway, Michigan Modern, Design That Shaped America. Anthony Flint, Wrestling with Moses, How Jane Jacobs Took on New York's Master Builder and Transformed the American City. Robert Caro, The Power Broker, Robert Moses and the Fall of New York. Claude M. Steele, Whistling Vivaldi, How Stereotypes Affect Us and What We Can Do. For more information on learning styles and gender inclusion in software design, Gender Mag by Margaret Burnett, http://gendermag.org. Marie Hicks, Programmed Inequality, How Britain Discarded Women Technologists and Lost Its Edge in Computing. Chapter 6, There's No Such Thing as Normal. For more information on the history of anthropological and mathematical ways of studying people, Margaret Mead, Cultural Patterns and Technical Change, A Manual. Todd Rose, The End of Average, How We Succeed in a World That Values Sameness. Clifford Geertz, The Interpretation of Cultures, Selected Essays, 3rd Edition. For more information on cognitive inclusion, Steve Silberman, Neurotribes, The Legacy of Autism and the Future of Neurodiversity. Chapter 7, Love Stories and Outcomes. For more examples of inclusive design, Graham Pullen, Design Meets Disability. For more thoughts on the business case for inclusion, Mark Kaplan and Mason Donovan, The Inclusion Dividend, why investing in diversity and inclusion pays off. Vint Cerf, The Internet is for Everyone. Speech to the Computers, Freedom, and Privacy Conference, April 7, 1999. https://www.itu.int/itu-d/ict/papers/witwatersrand/vint%20cerf.pdf. Chapter 8, Inclusion is Designing the Future. For more information on machine learning, artificial intelligence, and inclusion, Kathy O'Neill, Weapons of Math Destruction, How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. Sarah Watcher-Betcher, Technically Wrong, Sexist Apps, Biased Algorithms, and Other Threats of Toxic Tech. Pedro Domingos, The Master Algorithm, How the Quest for the Ultimate Learning Machine Will Remake Our World. You've been listening to Mismatch by Kat Holmes, narrated by Kat Holmes. Copyright 2018 by Kat Holmes. Published by arrangement with MIT Press. Recording copyright 2020 by Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books. If you've enjoyed this audiobook, please visit gildanmedia.com, where you'll find a wide selection of our unabridged titles. Thank you for being a Gildan Audio listener.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.